everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for today's Appraisal Buzzcast. With me, as always, is your host, Hal Humphreys. Hey, Hal, how are you doing?
Good morning, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great. We have a great guest today, someone that we talked with at the Appraisal Summit. We always talk about these networking opportunities at the summit, so we were able to meet some guests there, and we're welcoming in Stephanie Streep. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I think we're doing good, Stephanie. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We're really excited to have you here. And as always, it was a pleasure to see you in Las Vegas. You know, for the folks out there listening who don't know who you are, do you mind to tell us a little bit about yourself, your history in the industry? How did you get sucked into the real estate appraisal world?
Sure. I got in because my dad started doing appraising when I was in high school. It's his second career. And I went to college and I wanted to get into early childhood, actually. And I was an assistant director of a preschool and I loved my job, but it didn't pay very well for how much liability there was. And the further up you go the ladder, the further you got away from the kids. And I didn't like that. And so my dad took me out with him on some appraisals and he's like, well, I just made what you make in a week. And I was like, okay, so maybe tell me a little bit more about this. And so, I moved back home and started doing appraisals. I love math and I love solving problems and that kind of stuff. And even the human interaction that I learned from all my college stuff still plays out and is used every day. So I really enjoy what I do now.
And tell me, what is your position now? What is your job?
I am the managing partner of our company. And so we currently have 3 appraisers in our office and 2 administrators.
Okay. Wow. And how long have you been at the game of real estate appraisal?
13 years now. And we have had several trainees throughout the years. We've had 5. And I've had a trainee in my office for the past 7 years. This is actually new, not having one right now. So it's been a nice little break to just focus on myself. But I mean, I started teaching and I've always liked teaching. So training kind of came naturally to me. I was like, yeah, let's go along. I'll teach.
I love it. Well, let's do this. I'm going to take a real quick break and hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
The Dictionary of Real Estate Appraisal, 7th edition, is a landmark text that reflects the depth and breadth of appraisal knowledge. Each entry, definition, and reference has been painstakingly researched and designed to reflect an expert understanding of issues that currently impact the profession. The new dictionary is an essential authoritative resource for all appraisers. The dictionary is divided into 2 sections, an alphabetical listing of terms directly related to real estate appraisal, and an addendum with topical glossaries and compilations of terms used by related real estate professionals. Find it at appraisalinstitute.org/dictionary7.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphreys. I'm joined today by Stephanie Streep. Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. You know, one of the things that has been talked about recently and specifically at the Appraisal Summit is this notion of subjective language. And I have a couple of things I want to kind of walk through with you there. What does that even mean?
So subjective language is, you know, it's for me, how somebody explained it, which was amazing, is using terms that are a conclusion without any data to support it. And so if you say something's good, how? And I mean, when this first started coming out, like all the bias stuff, I was like, we do not have a problem. I don't know what everybody's talking about. And then I even told Lyle at Axe in April, I was like, okay, after your examples, I think we have a problem. And I was like, I had no idea that this is what people were putting in reports. And you're right, this should not be in reports. And so I understand where they were coming from at that point. So, you know, once you understand where people are coming from, you're a little more open to their ideas and what they have to say. And I was guilty of the, you know, the good, something's a good neighborhood or a good build or it's a superior house or whatever, and not explaining how or why. And I really liked when we started addressing that because it made me actually think a little bit more, because we're so used to like how builders put up their websites or how realtors advertise, and they use all that subjective language. And, you know, it's a desirable neighborhood or whatever it may be. And it's not the same for us. We're supposed to be data driven, not subjective.
Yeah. And the one that hits me is, you know, my father was a real estate appraiser as well. And he taught me, you know, when you're describing the neighborhood, describe how close the shopping is and all that stuff. So if it's a walkable neighborhood, say it's a walkable neighborhood, or if it's, you know, if it's everything's within a convenient distance, say that it's convenient distance. Well, the problem with walkable is it's not the same for everybody. And the problem with convenient is the gauge of convenience is different if you're living in Pocatello, Idaho versus Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
So what may be convenient for me might be a real pain for someone else. So when I was talking to some of the folks at the summit about that issue, it was more of a matter of, you know, there are shopping, you know, availability within 0.2 miles of the home. There's a shopping area 3 miles from the home, whatever it is. But at that point, you're dealing in facts and not this kind of subjective idea of walkable or convenient. And that makes sense to me. You know, how are you guys dealing with this in your office with trying to think through what is a subjective term? And number two, how do you fix it if you realize, oh, I'm using something that could be interpreted?
So we did kind of what you guys did, because we did the same thing with like easy or convenient or walkable. And I was like, you're right, walkable is not the same for everybody. Me walking versus my grandma walking, not the same. And so once we started realizing that, I started pulling up Google Maps like you did and started measuring distances to stuff and went, okay, what's actually in this area? How far is it? Is it, you know, easily down the street? Down the street easily, or is it 0.2 miles, you know, or is it 1 mile, whatever it may be. And then whenever it came to, if we were trying to say something was a superior builder or neighborhood or whatever, Heather and Pam had a great presentation during the summit, and they kind of went over some of that stuff and was like, instead of saying superior neighborhood, say, okay, in this neighborhood, I pulled this data that shows that houses in this neighborhood are selling at 5% more than this neighborhood. Or, you know, this neighborhood has 3-side brick. This one doesn't. This has one or none. This has metal roof. This has a composition. Actually break it down instead of just the conclusion of its superior. And that's what I had to really start going through.
And I think the interesting thing, so for like roof types, I've seen appraisers say this home has a superior roof type than this other home. The easy fix there is this home has a brand new standing seam metal roof. This other one has a 30-year warrantied asphalt shingle tile, or, you know, asphalt shingle on it. One has a 30-year guarantee. The other has a lifetime guarantee. And instead of saying this is superior or this is inferior, just pointing out the actual measurable differences between the two.
I like to explain it as if somebody's can't see the house. What describe the house instead of just it's a better house or whatever.
Right, so. Right. There has been some pushback in the appraisal space on, you know, the language police, and, you know, they can't tell me what words to use and what words not to use. I even saw an appraiser make the argument, they're infringing on my First Amendment right for free speech. It's like, I don't think you have a First Amendment right to free speech when you're dealing with a professional report for valuation purposes. Now, I'm sure I'm going to get 5,000 emails from people telling me I don't know constitutional law. And you're right, I don't. But that's not really the point. The point is, it is possible to describe these things using actual measurable metrics. And instead of saying superior or inferior, just pointing out the measurable differences between things. Instead of saying walkable, say it's, you know, half a mile, 0.2 miles, whatever it is. Have you seen any pushback from, you know, your appraiser friends on the subjective language issue?
Oh, yeah. definitely we have. And, you know, even if you want to argue the First Amendment right thing, even if it is, it doesn't mean you don't have consequences. So in my opinion, I would just rather avoid it so that if anything happens, they have nothing to get me on. So it's like, why, you know, they could claim something, but if all I have in there is actual facts, you got nothing. So why would you want to put yourself in that situation?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. At the end of the day, an appraiser's job is to analyze the available information, interpret that information, and report on that information to our clients. And doing so in a way that is measurable and fact-based, I think, is actually a cleaner way to do it. Let's do this, Stephanie. Let's take another quick break and hear from another one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Did you know that NAN hosts quarterly discussions with our appraisal panel on bias, inclusion, equity, and diversity initiatives that impact the appraisal industry? The topic of bias in the appraisal world will remain at the forefront of legislative, agency, and lender priorities well into the future. At NAN, we believe that intentional bias is only a very small fraction of the underlying issue, and that outdated policies and regulations and unconscious bias are a far greater concern. It's our hope to work closely with the appraiser community as partners in an endeavor to improve processes and procedures and ensure equitable treatment for all valuations. Learn more by visiting nan-amc.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Appraisal Buzz. I'm Hal Humphrey. Stephanie Streep is with me today. Stephanie, again, thank you for being here today. You know, we've talked about the language police and subjective words and stuff like that. You mentioned earlier that you have done the trainee thing a couple of times. You've had trainees in your office. Tell us about your history as a supervisor. What was that like?
When I first started out, I kept hearing about how there is an appraisal shortage, and I didn't understand, because when I got into it, it was just my dad. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll follow you around, learn this stuff. And it was very interesting to me. Well, then I got certified, and I was so used to running the office for my dad. Then I started going out, and I was like, I can't do all of this. I can't run your office and myself and go out and all of that. So it was funny. I, at the time, did CrossFit, and I was at the gym, and one of my friends, she's my coach, which you probably met her, Marcella, and she was like, hey, I'm looking for another part-time job. Let me know if you hear anything. And I was like, okay. And the next day, when I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. We're looking for someone. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah. So she started coming over and started learning it. And we're like, hey, you know, if you want to do this, you could do it. And she's like, really? Okay. And she kind of hemmed and hawed because she was going to go into nursing. And then decided to actually pursue appraising. And so at that point, when she decided, I'd been licensed long enough to be her supervisor, and my dad was her supervisor as well. So she had two. And she went through that process. We had a couple others that we met, one that I also met through the gym as well. And then I had one that I met through family friends, and then two that we got off of the ATA, the Association of Texas Appraisers. They have a running list of trainees looking for supervisors. And so we grabbed that list and called a bunch of the trainees that were in our area and brought them all in for interviews. And that's how we got our most recent two trainees. And for the most part, it's worked out great. Two of them have now become certified. One of them just decided appraising wasn't for them, which is fine, you know, and then the other two had to leave for personal reasons. It was nothing, you know, against them or that they didn't want to continue. It was just, they had family stuff they had to take care of. And I said, well, the door's always open. You can come back if you decide. So, awesome.
So it seems like that worked out pretty well for you. I hear appraisers across the country that have pushback on taking on a trainee. You know, the usual, I don't want to train my competition. It takes too much time. It takes too much money. It takes too much effort. It sounds like you've had a good experience with this. What would be one thing you would tell someone who is thinking about taking on a trainee to help them get their head around it?
Well, I would say all of those reasons are completely valid. It does take a lot of time. It does take a lot of effort. It is a lot of work. But if you enjoy doing what you do, I enjoy telling other people about what I do. And that's essentially what a supervisor is anyway. You know, it's explaining your passion. So I'm just telling somebody all day what I do and showing them how to do it. And then the flip side of it is I probably learned more having a trainee than I ever would if I didn't have a trainee, because they are constantly asking questions and they sometimes say things I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. I don't know what, let's figure this out together. Yeah. And then it's a great learning experience for both of us. And it really does keep me on my toes and it keeps me in line and making sure that I'm still doing the best, because I don't want to train somebody inappropriately.
I love it. I love it. Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I literally can't thank you enough. It's so good to see you this quickly after the appraisal summit. I'm going to call Jim Morrison back in the room. Jim, you know, I know you usually come to the table with an anonymous appraiser question, but I got one yesterday. And Stephanie, this is going to fit right into the topic we were talking about in the first part of the show. So this is the email that I got. Hal, you and Jim Morrison mentioned that a bad word to use was gentrification. I believe it was an appraiser you knew, and somehow it got kicked up to the powers that be. First, how can gentrification be a bad word if that's what's happening in the market? Second, it would sound to me like a highest best use item might need to be discussed if the homes, single family, should remain or be raised in an area with gentrification. And yes, land value as tear down with raising costs included to understand the land value. Third, don't readers, lenders want to know what an older community is going through? Don't they want to know when the process of gentrification is going on with tear downs and updated new homes coming into the market? I find that a little weird that gentrification is off the table. I'm not sure that was a question at all, but I do wear a Stetson and sometimes it can get a little tight. So here's my question, Stephanie, your thoughts on the word gentrification and why that might be a problem.
Well, it's the gentrification, what it actually means, has to do with racial stuff. And so we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about everything he wrote in the email. You know, teardowns, what's going on in the neighborhood, it's older, being replaced by new stuff. Whatever's actually going on in the neighborhood, say that. You don't need to label it.
I absolutely love that answer. And the fact that you pointed out that the answer to his question was in the email. Instead of using the word gentrification or regentrification, which I hear some people say, just say what's going on. There are older homes that are being torn down or gutted and renovated. There may be a highest best use issue here because land value is so high because they're tearing down the older homes and building newer homes. If you say those things, you don't have to use the word gentrification. Here's the thing, Stephanie, and this is just my thought, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong on this. You know, the word desirability is in a lot of textbooks dealing with economic theory. It is in several textbooks. The word desirability is one of the things that actually creates value, that the item or the thing has to be desirable. Gentrification is an economic term. It is used in economics textbooks throughout the world. It is a very real phenomenon. But my thought is both of those words, even though they're used in definitions and used in textbooks, they are placed squarely in context in those settings, number one. And number two, when I hear gentrification, I don't necessarily think it's a racial issue. I think it's an economic issue. I'm thinking specifically of neighborhoods in Berlin and Germany, where you know it was not a racial issue. It was just a fact of there were older properties that had been abandoned, and young, less advantaged people had moved in to that area and started squatting, and then their friends started coming over for parties. And then over a course of a couple of years, it ended up being those were the cool lofts that everybody was interested in. And it had totally flipped, right? So I don't see it as a racial thing, but people can interpret it, gentrification, to have a racial undertone. People can interpret desirability to have a racial undertone. And I think we can describe those things, like you said, with actual facts from what's happening on the ground without actually saying those words. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I think it comes down to, and I hate to say it, being lazy. You know, if you could say gentrification, or you could say everything you put in the email. You know, you could say desirable or explain why it's desirable. You could say good or explain why it's good. One takes longer than the other, but one is data and like actual facts, and one is a conclusion. And your conclusion, like desirability, might be different than somebody else's. You know, there's a neighborhood here in San Antonio that is desirable, and I like where I live differently than that one. You know, doesn't mean that the homes aren't selling at a certain price. That's the fact. The fact is what they're selling at and the market that is related to it. We don't need to have all these like conclusion subjective words to explain stuff. We just need the facts behind that conclusion that you made.
I love it. Stephanie, thank you again. Jim Morrison, is there anything else we need to cover today?
No, but if anybody has any other anonymous appraisers, you don't have to put in your height, weight, what you wear. Reach out to us at comments@appraisalbuzz.com.
And I will say to the anonymous appraiser question that I read today, that is from a good friend of mine that has been in my classes a couple of times over the years. And he does, in fact, wear a Stetson. He is a stellar human being, does really good work, and he has really good questions. And I enjoyed getting that question. So if you have an anonymous appraiser question, please send it in to us. What's that email address, Jim?
It's comments@appraisalbuzz.com.
Great. Anything else?
That's it.
In which case, for Jim Morrison and Stephanie Streep, I'm Hal Humphries, and that is your Appraisal Buzzcast for today.